This is Fruit Punch, Gay Men's Radio for Northern California. In this program, we bring you analysis and commentary on the recent election in Dade County, Florida, on gay rights.
Pickup truck while I wore out my shoes, but he'd always walk beside me when we went up to old Joe's. Like all the other kids in town, I had never seen his face, though I used to leave his groceries on the back door of his place. And I knew somebody lived there, 'cause by morning they'd be gone. But the curtains of old Joe's house were always tightly drawn. They say that in his younger days he had loved another man, and when the small town started to hawking, his friend died by his own hand. There were whispers among the women and hard talk among the men, but the curtains of old Joe's house were never pulled again. I could tell you where this happened, but I think you ought to know that right there where you're living, there are people like old Joe. 'Cause each of us has secrets that we leave on backroom shelves, keep them hidden from our neighbors and often from ourselves. But everybody's got the right to be the way they are. If you're not hurting someone else, then you've not gone too far. So before you start to criticize the lives that others lead, take a good look in your mirror and be sure of what you see. They say that in his younger days he had loved another man, and what went on between them no one there could understand. There were whispers among the women and hard talk among the men, but the curtains of old Joe's house were never pulled again.
The people of Dade County, the normal majority, have said enough, enough, enough.
That was Anita Bryant at her victory celebration in Dade County, Florida. Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin. CBS News commentator Shana Alexander says Bryant is a sexual fascist. San Francisco Sheriff Richard Hongisto says he thinks she's nuts. And the Arkansas state legislature unanimously endorsed her campaign, saying people who break God's law have no human rights. This morning, Bryant announced plans long expected to go nationwide.
Already been contacted by many communities and individuals all across the nation who have similar problems and are concerned and want our help. So this will be our main concern.
There are 40 local ordinances guaranteeing civil rights for gay people in cities and counties across the country. They will be the targets of the new and expanded Save Our Children Incorporated. This is Jock Church for Pacific News.
I'm Kevin Burke here with Andy Seal, Guy Bishop, and Lee Watson. We're going to bring you analysis of what we think happened, what other people across the country think happened in Dade County last week, as well as solicit your comments, both telling us what you think happened in Miami, what you feel, and asking us questions. First, we're going to go into a little background about what the vote was all about.
The first repeal of gay rights legislation in a major metropolitan area took place Tuesday, June 7th, as voters in Dade County, Florida, turned out in large numbers to vote in favor of repealing, by a 2-to-1 margin, a gay rights ordinance passed in January of this year by the Miami Metro Commission. Singer Citrus Queen Anita Bryant organized a group called Save Our Children in opposition to the ordinance. In February, she succeeded in gathering 60,000 signatures on a petition demanding a referendum to repeal the ordinance. Among her forces, she counted anti-ERA factions, conservative Christian church groups, and right-wing Cuban organizations. Bryant has sworn to wage holy battle against national gay rights. Voter turnout was estimated at around 50% of the electorate. By 11 o'clock, the margin had stabilized at 2-1, and Dade County gay leader Jack Campbell had conceded defeat. His statement stressed the positive side of the campaign, noting the mobilization of gays and straights around the country and overseas, and pointing out that over $350,000 had been raised with money still pouring in. Asked if he could pinpoint any weaknesses in the Gay Coalition's campaign, Campbell replied that many of the political operatives came from outside the county. Local liberal activists were scared off by the viciousness of the campaign waged by Anita Bryant and Save Our Children. Campbell also said that the last-minute advertising by Save Our Children was particularly vicious. Some of the high points of the campaign included the support from straight organizations, including the American Jewish Committee, the National YWCA, the American Bar Association, the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, National Federation of Catholic Priests Council, and the National Democratic Party. Also, the American Civil Liberties Union, United Church of Christ, and the Lutheran Church. So in New York, we spoke with Congressman Ed Koch, who was one of the sponsors and prime movers behind the National Gay Rights Bill now pending in Congress.
Yes, I think it's a disappointment to people who believe in human rights. We haven't won the battle for ERA, and we haven't won the battle for blacks or Hispanics.
Well, the first thing we want to get into, after you've heard these two background reports on the vote in Miami, is some analysis. We're first going to talk to Doug Ireland, Bill Abzug's campaign manager involved in the Miami gay media campaign. He was also an early strategist in the campaign for gay rights in Dade County. And another man from New York, Lenny Bloom, who was also involved early in the campaign to vote down the repeal.
Well, I think that the important thing for our community is that this issue mobilized us for the first time in a way that I don't think we've been mobilized before. Circumstance which we were fighting against overwhelming odds and in territory not of our own choosing, against a campaign that was well funded by the radical right and the organized forces of reaction who have opposed the ERA and opposed abortion reform and opposed other liberal issues. And I think that what's been helpful is that the love that dare not speak its name has now been speaking its name on the front pages of newspapers all over this country and on the front pages of the national news media. And that hopefully what has happened here is that our community has been galvanized into a new awareness of the need for all gay women and men to struggle for themselves. No one will do it for us. We must do it ourselves. This time we did. We lost, but we have to fight again.
I think the defeat is going to make some of the people in the gay community who were not particularly politically aware before a little more sensitized on their own issue. And I think that was important. And I think it's also important, as Douglas said, that this became a national issue. This was the first time that we were able to really find the media legitimizing the gay issue as a legitimate civil liberty and human rights issue. And I think that's an important aspect that came out of this campaign, win or lose.
Well, one thing that did disturb me about the way in which the media covered the campaign in Florida was the issue was framed almost entirely in terms of Anita Bryant, and I think that it's unfortunate that in our community that also had that same focus on Anita galvanized our community, but in a way that I'm not sure helped our community to understand the issue as clearly as it ought to. I think there were a lot of references to Anita that I would have to, from our own community and from our own people, from gay men in particular, that I would have to characterize as sexist. And that troubled me. I think we have to learn from that to focus the issue, as Lenny says, not on the personalities involved, but on the fundamental concepts involved, which is that what we had here was an attack on basic constitutional rights. I think the reason that we were able to garner as much straight support as we did is that there was a lot of understanding that the attack on gay rights in Dade County is simply one part of an orchestrated national attack on human rights being led by the reactionaries. Ronald Reagan was raising money for Anita Bryant in Houston. Phyllis Schlafly, the leader of the anti-ERA forces, campaigned in Dade County against the ordinance, and the John Birch Society sent in money. And once again, we were the object of the attack because we were the most defenseless and powerless minority. Now, traditionally in societies, when you have an attack upon the most defenseless and powerless minority in that society and it's not resisted, that is the harbinger of totalitarianism, of authoritarianism, of a wholesale attack on rights of all powerless and defenseless people across the board. I think it's that understanding that was conveyed to many of our straight allies who were helpful in this struggle. And I think that that has to be the message that we carry forward from this campaign. This is not simply an attack on gay people alone, but gay people are now out front, more so because of this campaign than ever. And I think we are going to continue to be the subject of attacks. And we must not only resist them, we must mobilize not only to defend ourselves, but to aggressively affirm our commitment not only to human rights for all people, and to lock our struggle for human rights with the struggle for rights of other minorities. I think we also have to understand that the primary task we have is to organize ourselves even better and stronger so that next time we don't lose. Unfortunately, Dade County is still predominantly a conservative area. In Florida, we did not secure the support of any of our elected officials publicly, although a couple were closet supporters. The governor came out against gay rights and said he wouldn't want a homosexual teaching his children or on his staff, whereupon one of his staff held a press conference and resigned, saying, well, if Governor Askew doesn't want me on his staff, I don't want him to be on his staff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people came out of the closet in this campaign, which I think is a testament to their courage, because the atmosphere down there was terribly bigoted and oppressive, and there were bombings and beatings and at least two suicides, and I think the atmosphere of hate, which was generated by the opponents of gay rights, helped to galvanize us nationally, even though it may have had its horrific impact locally in the vote, which we saw, unfortunately.
One of the things that we discussed in trying to put this program together was leadership. If this issue is really as broad and as important as the last speaker made it seem, then it seems important to talk about who's going to lead a fight for human rights. In an earlier tape a few minutes ago, the man talked about the liberals in Miami, the local quote, so-called leaders, being scared off. The heat got too much for them in spite of the importance of the issue, and most of the leadership was left to outside people, and most of the outside people who could afford to be in Miami are people who have money and people who make money off gay people being out. And so that's one of the things that we'd like to discuss, is who are our leaders and what do they represent.
I think it's important to remember there's never been an organized gay movement in Miami. In 1972, when the conventions were held there, outside people came in then also to organize demonstrations against the Republicans and the Democrats, and also to push for a gay rights amendment in the Democratic platform. I think it's important to realize that all leadership in Miami, save for one or two people, came from New York and San Francisco. There was a supreme emphasis on respectability, that we're no different from straight people, that we're just as normal as everybody. There also was an emphasis on civil rights issue, that being the sole issue that was in question, as opposed to the Save Our Children campaign. This was all coming from leadership in Miami. The leadership was also effectively retained by middle and upper class white men. There were real few women involved. And clearly they had no class analysis of what was going on and discouraged more militant segments of the gay community from taking part in the struggle. Some of the people who had a lot of say in Miami were David Goodstein, the editor of The Advocate here in San Francisco, Jim Foster, who claims to speak for the gay community in San Francisco and is a member of Mayor Moscone's staff, Jack Campbell from Miami, the owner of the Club Bath chain, and Ethan Ghetto, a Democratic leader from the Bronx in New York. I think it's also real important to remember that the Miami leadership made no outreach to third world communities or any other community where anti-gay sentiment was supposed to exist. Thus, they didn't make any outreach to white working class communities. They wrote them off. They targeted 126 precincts out of a total of 440 in Miami, which a lot of people are criticizing them now for just not going into about three quarters of the precincts there. Do we have any other comments on leadership in Miami here?
I'm not clear from what you've said why it's important that some white men with money were giving direction to what went on. I mean, what does that affect? Aren't they intelligent people? Don't they know the right questions or the right way to talk to people? Or,
well, I think it's telling in that the communities that were targeted were highly educated, affluent, Jewish students or young people. They didn't even attempt to go into any third world communities. Yet when the vote was in, the strongest support we had came from the black community, which the leadership wrote off. They didn't see black people and other oppressed people as our allies. Now criticism is coming around the point that, gee, there are other oppressed peoples too who have the same enemy that we do. Why weren't those people ever educated around gay rights as a civil rights issue? So whereas you think they would be pretty smart, some people are saying now that they weren't, that they were real dumb in some ways, the way they went about building support. Also, I think that we could talk a little bit about the demographics in Miami. An unusually high turnout came for this election with no candidates, 45%, which is what some communities turn out for an election with candidates. And you go through the different communities within Miami. The Cuban community, the Cuban exile community, voted 8-1 in favor of repeal. No attempt was made at any outreach to them. The white working class community voted 6-1 for repeal. We had marginal support from liberals, young people, and the Jewish community as a whole. We had strong support from the elderly Jewish community and from the black community. Jewish senior citizen turnout would have been much larger if a rent control measure, which was originally on the ballot, was not removed at the last moment. And there's some talk now that Save Our Children had some hand in that, although nothing has been proved. I think it's also telling that there are over 700,000 registered voters in Dade County. Over 500,000 of these were Democrats. The local Democratic Executive Committee opposed repeal of the ordinance. Tacitly, they were on the side of gay rights, yet they did nothing to put any teeth in their what they said. Usually, with a county with a 5-1 Democratic majority, what the Democratic Executive Committee would say would carry some weight, but they made no attempt to put any teeth in what they were saying. I think next we're going to go to another interview we have providing analysis. Again, this interview was done in New York as the votes trickled in. We'd like to thank our reporter in New York, Murray Edelman, for providing us with these interviews. The man we're about to hear is Ken Sherrill, a noted political analyst from the City University of New York, who has been involved in many New York state campaigns and other gay rights campaigns throughout the nation.
I think the short-term consequence is going to remind a lot of gay people that the repression is coming, that we have to mobilize, that in fact gay people are going to benefit from this setback because we're going to forget the complacency of the past half dozen years. And I think that we're going to learn that it's not that easy to be gay in America. And it's not that easy to be gay even in a liberal place like Miami or New York or San Francisco. We've had our time of being fashionable. Now we're going to go back to our time of being militant because we've been denied our rights.
You think it might drive a lot of people back in the closet?
No. I think the opposite. I think that, first of all, there's a generation of people from roughly 18 to 26 who have gotten used to being free. And they're not prepared to have their freedom taken away from them. Secondly, and I think much more importantly, there's a generation of people from, say, 35 to 45 who have adjusted to being free and are not prepared to lose that freedom, and indeed are prepared, if not to put themselves or their bodies or their jobs on their line, are prepared to write checks. And I think that the movement is immensely helped by the fact that the forces of bigotry have had a temporary victory, because it's going to bring gay people who have not before contributed to the gay movement to provide the kind of financial help that will enable the younger members of the gay movement to act militantly. I think the campaign was waged very effectively, with a major exception. And that is that instead of focusing on the issue of bigotry, people chose to focus on Anita Bryant. And I think that a lot of vile and sexist things were said about Anita Bryant because she was such an obvious focus of the campaign, which separated us from feminists, which is going to make it difficult for us to reestablish the bridges and connections that we have. That is, I don't think that we can get away with saying squeeze Anita or something of that sort, because that's the kind of standard male stereotype of women that offends the women that we expect to be our colleagues in this battle. We have to really align ourselves with the forces which fight for civil rights, which fight against bigotry. I think that the issue in Florida is not merely one of gay rights. I think one is going to look at the Florida Citrus Commission. You've got to look at the conditions of migrant laborers. You've got to look at the kinds of people that Governor Askew has appointed to that commission. And you discover that people are living in poverty. You discover that people are living without adequate medical care. It's not orange juice. It's every Florida citrus product that is produced by exploiting the poorest people in Florida, and which is then used to justify horrendous things said about gay people. And I think that our move, our next move, is not purely a pro-gay move. Our move is to align ourselves with the orange pickers, the field workers. We need a Cesar Chavez in Florida. We need to align ourselves with Chavez, because the problem in Florida is that migrant laborers and farm workers don't have the protection that farm workers now have, at least in potential, in California. But we also have made it clear that our fight in Florida is not purely a gay rights fight. It's a human rights fight in terms of the right to have decent wages, in terms of the right to have decent medical care, in terms of the right to have decent housing. We are fighting, but we have been opposed by the most repressive, the most discriminatory group of people. They raised a great amount of money. They raised the scare campaign. They went after faggots. But the real reason for their going after us was to cover up for the ways in which they treat farm workers. I think that the time has come for us to tie in with every other human rights movement. I think that our immediate movement in Florida ought to be to liberate farm workers, and to build from our movement on farm workers to every other form of human rights. Human rights are human rights, period. I think that the money-grubbing side of the movement has lost its credibility. The media blitz does not work. What works is mobilization at the grassroots. And what we need to do is to build a gay machine. What we need to do is to register gay voters. It's a step-by-step programmatic approach. What's going to work is to say that gay rights is the same thing as the rights of Hispanics, blacks, and everybody else who's put down in the state of Florida or any other state. And you know, we are simply another discriminated against group, and people who are discriminated against have got to unify and fight together, and that's all there is to it.
We're going to take call-ins now. The number is 848-4425. If you have some comment on some of the things you've heard or on some of what's going on or on how you think we might deal with this in the future. We have our first call, so let's try it. Hello, you're on the air.
I sure am. Hello, brother. This is Mama O'Shea. It's a good program, but I couldn't agree with the man more who just talked about the political aspects of it, because I think that is where you have to hit him from. When you attack Anita personally, although we'd all like to attack her personally, what you do is you make her the underdog, and then suddenly people feel very sorry for her, and she gains points. But attacking politically and attacking it from an oppressive point, such as the farm workers, is very important. I think the next big step in San Francisco is voter registration, and make sure that no one repeals or recalls Hengisto or Moscone, especially Hengisto, because he went down to help. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is the next big step. That's the next thing they're going to do. From San Francisco, you're going to jump to Sacramento because Briggs is going to be moving.
But the contradiction with Hengisto is he got just back in time to evict the tenants of the International Hotel.
Well, see, I don't know what he could have done about that. That was in the works anyhow. I mean, there isn't anything he could do unless he goes back to jail again. You know, he could do that. I really don't know what he could do on that. He went down and he did as much as he could. He put himself on the line knowing it was going to affect this August 2nd election thing. It was going to lose him some points. So I think you have to stand behind him and say, no one's going to be jeopardized for helping us. Right.
The thing that scares me is that in this state, the fight is going to be statewide. And in this state, Southern California has consistently voted down progressive legislation in spite of whatever happened in San Francisco.
You see, it's going to start here. And things that we can do is, for example, the Chronicle's editorial cartoon today was in terribly bad taste. I don't know if you saw it or not, with the Sam Hayakawa and Anita saying all gays are sick, and the caption is, play it again, Sam, you know. Okay, so there's enough gay people and enough straight people who take the Chronicle who object to it should start canceling subscriptions. That's where it hurts.
Right. That's what happened over Herb Cain. He not just attacks gay people, he's so racist, he attacks everybody.
Well, if you don't start, you know, doing without your Herb Cain for breakfast and doing without the Comical, San Francisco Comical, you're not going to do it. And I think that's what we should do, because we've got to start August the 2nd, and then we're going to have to hit Briggs. And I think there's been an awful lot of gay people who have not eaten grapes or lettuce during the strikes with Chavez. We should call in the tags now and say, come on, let's boycott citrus fruit in Florida and join with us to help the citrus people there. We're going to help you because we helped you once before, now you help us.
Right, and gay people are fighting people. We've had to fight all our lives just to exist, and it looks like we're going to have to do it again.
We'll start at the polls, brother. We'll all help.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Lupe, and I live in Berkeley. And I'm hearing, you know, a lot of talk about need for political action and dealing with the media and things like that. But I think it's also time to think of dealing personally with this every day in our own lives. Over the last few months, I've been speaking to classes at a college I attend here in the area. And I feel that with those experiences, I've really reached out and hopefully reached people to the extent to maybe anesthetize them or something against the hate campaign that is definitely coming in this state.
Another thing, when the hate is so thick, when things are said that are so completely wrong and such outright lies that gay people molest children, that gay people try to force their lifestyle on other people, you can't argue with that real well because it's so outlandish to begin with that just to go to that level pretty much deflates you.
But I agree with you that letting people see us and letting them talk to us is the level that we need to operate on, because we're dealing with something that people have had a lot of training behind. I mean, first of all, it deals with sex, which is basically repressed in most of our backgrounds. And people see us as somehow so sexual that I think that's threatening. And so I think what you're saying is one level that needs some work.
Yeah, because prejudice and bigotry really works in a vacuum. It works with ignorance. It works with lack of knowledge, lack of contact. And so, you know, the more of us that come out in our own lives and reach out to our families and our friends, I know that's really hard to do. I've experienced it in my own life. But the more we do that, the stronger we're going to be and the more ties with people we're going to have that's going to protect us against this kind of onslaught.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for calling.
Sure.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to say just one thing about this. I've been involved with the co-op, or attempting to get the co-op to boycott Anita Bryant's product. It seems to me that most of the people who's in the KPFA would realize now that this is not just a trivial matter, and that these boycotts mean something very important to us. It seems to me that anybody who is listening to this program who is straight should realize now that the time, if they value their own civil rights, the time is now to essentially stop drinking orange juice and stop supporting people who are that bigoted and who are denying us what most people would regard as ordinary civil rights.
I think the last point made in the interview about connecting our struggles to the struggles of the Florida farm workers can't be taken too lightly. It's the same enemy that oppresses us as gay people that oppresses the Florida farm workers, who are the least protected of anyone in the country. And we have to go on now because we're running out of time. We have one more tape segment that we think is real important. It's done by a Latino man from San Francisco who went to Miami to work on the campaign. He starts out by telling us why he went.
Eddie, why did you go down to Florida? Why did you feel it was important to take part in this struggle?
Because it was, I felt history in the making, and I wanted to be a part of it, and I didn't want to read about it later in some book. And also I wanted to see just how the politics around the Latin community was going to be handled. And since Miami has a large Cuban community, I went down there basically for that. I was watching this Cuban TV station, and Anita Bryant had two Cuban Spanish translators. And she started out with her usual rhetoric of about, you know, having her Bible in her hand and stating that if man sleeps with man, like man sleeps with woman, blah, 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 domination, etc. However, I was just my own impression that whoever wrote her script, and I question whoever wrote it, because I don't feel that this woman was that brilliant enough to come off with some of the statements that she did in dealing with the community. To me, she clearly manipulated and ripped off and abused the community, especially in relations to their values and their norms and their attitude that they hold very highly. She started out with that she knows that the role of the mother is a very highly honored position in the Latin community, and it is. That is true. But she tied that analogy in with, therefore, any mother who loves her children, like she knows that the Latin mother does and cares for her children, would understand what she's doing when she says, let's both save our children, and then coming off with the usual anti-gay rhetoric that she did. Another case in point would be she talked about the role of the family, which is very strong in the Latin communities, and about how any it would be understandable to her that any community would want to still have a strong family nucleus because they're a crucial part of the American value system. And if you understand the politics of the Cuban community in Miami, that is true. They're very pro-America and anti-Cuba.
Did she tie in the gay struggle with the struggle against communism at all?
Very cleverly. Very, very cleverly. This is one point that she made that absolutely, for the first time in my life, gave me a knot in my stomach. She explained that the Cuban community in Miami had to leave their country because they had a leader there who threatened their civil rights and their individual rights. And now the Cuban community in Miami was facing the same issue, only this time it was homosexuals who were threatening to violate their civil rights and their individual rights, and this community would have to leave Miami should this ordinance not be repealed. And she said it would not be an honorable place to raise a family, and she would understand why this community oriented around the family would have to leave Miami again.
It's interesting she used the word honorable, which as far as I can understand is real heavy connotations in the Latino community.
Yeah, she used them all. I mean, she used the word honor, she used the word mother, she used the word church. I mean, she went into the church a lot and how religiously oriented and respectable this community is as far as their ties with God and heaven will show the way and blah, blah, blah. And then she came out with her Bible quotes and stuff. And so it was quite brilliant, whoever wrote it for her. I guess what I didn't understand too much is why so much energy was focused on Anita Bryant and those statements that she came out with, all the myths and the stereotypes that a lot of people still hold true of gay people. That should have been all bypassed. I mean, they should have completely ignored that and just stuck to a civil rights issue with what it was. Because Anita Bryant isn't our only enemy. I mean, their main focus point on her only was an error. There's lots of Anita Bryants. They're all over the place. You just haven't seen them as much as we saw them in Miami. They're here in California the day after that ordinance was repealed in Miami. We had this legislator down in Fullerton, Briggs, who's now trying to introduce this anti-gay legislation against gay teachers. So I am saying that, you know, focus on your enemy who's practically everywhere. I mean, there's Anita Bryant's all over the place, not just one person.
From the early information we have on demographics for Miami, the only two communities that gave us consistent support were the black community and the elderly Jewish community. Not the Jewish community as a whole, but elderly Jews did. Why do you think that was?
See, I want to caution myself there because I'm not a member of the black community. I'm not the person to speak about the black community, no more than I am to speak about the Jewish community. It was my own experience there, though, that I guess the thing that I was most impressed with was the elderly Jews. They right away responded to us about knowing firsthand what discrimination and oppression was, especially they had a lot of horror stories, too, of the Nazi period, concentration camps, et cetera, et cetera. And that was basically the most thing that I picked up on. Basically, the black community was, they were anti-gay until an article appeared in the paper where the KKK endorsed Anita Bryant. And see, that's my whole point there, is that I think the community can educate itself around the gay issue. To me, it's not necessary to go and attack a community. I don't care if it's the Latino community, the Asian community, the black community, the Jewish community. It just isn't necessary to attack their values, their norms, or their attitudes. Just raise a consciousness about the gay issue being a civil rights issue. I mean, case in point would be when the KKK pro-statement for Anita Bryant came out. Well, they clearly saw it then that it was going to be civil rights issues. Tons of cars of black community leaders and black community members came in, got our literature, didn't really work at all closely with the coalition, but just got our literature and distributed it to their community the day before the election. I felt that as really one of the strongest things that I came back with and feeling the most good about is that I know the community can educate itself.